Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, we've got Jacob and Aki. How are you two doing?
I'm alive.
I am apparently going to have to carry the entire show.
Yeah.
So that means that Brooke is going to have to carry the show with about like 2 hours worth of bun talk.
Yeah, Brooke's here. Brooke, how are you doing?
What up? I'm pretty good. Can't complain.
And then Bree is here too. Bree, how are you doing?
I'm kind of excited.
Yes.
Good.
Why? Because we're going to talk about brisket?
Brisket.
Bun.
Oh, brisket's, is that bun bun? Oh, I didn't realize brisket was the name.
Well, you know, this is like my first real pet. So I'm going through that new pet owner thing where like I gave him a name, but like I immediately started using nicknames and I've never used his name again. So right now we call him Baby Bread. And that's about it. We call them pumpkin muffin, pumpkin bread. Mm-hmm. Yep. The list goes on.
I thought it was going to be Abra Bun Lincoln.
Oh my God. What was that one? We had a bunch of presidential rabbit names.
Well, there was Robert E. Howard one that you were.
Oh my God. I should have named him Rabbit E. Howard. I realized this last week. I'm a huge fan of Robert E. Howard. I actually took a road trip many years ago to go see his grave and go to his little museum, which was the childhood home.
Oh, wow. Okay. I wasn't expecting that. Cool.
Big fan.
I don't think anyone was.
Yeah, no. My dad was pretty big into Robert E. Howard stuff when he was like teenager into up until he had kids. We ruined that for him.
Well, nice going there.
How's Brisket doing?
He's doing pretty good. I got him a rug and he loves it. He's just flopping around all the time. We got like fake hardwood, like linoleum type floors. So he's scuffling around and he's just so enthusiastic. He will like run really fast and then slide and hit the wall because he's so, I'm like, we got to get you a rug, buddy. So your little claws can get into the rug. And, that's the
Has
big thing that's happened.
Started
this week.
Eating the rug it. Yet?
He hasn't yet. He kind of gives it a little nibble, you know. He started. The only thing he's really wanted to eat was that board game. Everything else, no. He ate a little bit of my calendar. So I don't know. I think he likes the paper products. I'm hoping.
Oh yeah, they like chewing wood too. If you leave them in a bathroom.
Yeah.
What kind of calendar?
Why are you leaving rabbits in a bathroom?
Some people keep pets in bathrooms. When they're, you know, people. Not around.
Oh, okay.
What kind of calendar was it?
Advent?
It's actually a little rabbit calendar. I'll show you a picture. It's a rabbit calendar that now it's the calendar I'm using to get my shit together. I make some goals for the year. And every day I do my little goal to put a little rabbit sticker on the calendar. It's this whole thing, you know.
So maybe the rabbit wanted to cannibalize things. Okay.
Yeah. I was like, at first I was like, I can't even be mad at you, little dude. This is too cute.
Oh, so the bun's doing good. Bree, how are the kitties?
There was some drama.
Oh no.
Cheek's getting old and she's very fluffy and her vent is very fluffy and she as an old lady has problems in the bathroom and that means that we have to give her a butt bath. And if you've ever heard of her breed, which is a Burman, there are horror stories written on the internet about how you basically should fully kit yourself in like medieval plate armor to try and even attempt to put the cat near the water. It takes at least two people to get the job done, and all we're trying to do is just get her butt near the water. So this time there was minimal blood. I'm very pleased we were able to get through that with minimal blood. So, but yeah, that's becoming a regular occurrence. And Dirham does not like listening to her cry, and it makes him very sad. And he's very confused and doesn't know what's going on, and just hopes it doesn't happen to him. So, yeah.
Everyone just cries and has a bad time.
Yeah. But less blood. That's a good sign.
Yay. Definitely. Usually.
I can sympathize on the floofy cat butt. Because Jelly is very floofy, and we've had to shave her a few times.
I don't think that would ever happen.
Booty buzz. We got to give her a booty buzz and just trim that hair back there. And
can't clip her nails, none of that. Anything sharp, scissory, no, not going to happen.
Yeah, we usually do it like while she's sleeping. We'll sneak up on her, and it, we have like a really quiet pet razor, and we'll just like
bzzz. Oh, that's smart. I wish.
So that's why my butt like just has no hair every single time I come visit you guys.
Hey, for you guys to have to find out like this.
Yeah, so apparently every single time I go sleep over at Joe and Ashley's, I wake up the next morning with a freshly shorn sphincter.
You know, some people have to pay for that, so.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, well, here's my thing. I just wish he'd bleach it, too.
He expects so much for so little. It's like, come on. What am I getting out of this?
Dude, well, hello. You're getting
a regular butt. You're being a Purnell over here. You're like, wow, you shaved and washed my butt. Like, why couldn't, are you guys ever going to add like farming or like collectibles or something? Like, come on.
I was going to say, did anybody know that the technical term for cleaning a sheep's vent is called cropping? I mean, now since we're just talking about shaving asses at this point, I mean, like, right? There you go. I've actually done that as a volunteer. Anyway.
Respect.
The best cropping story I have is me and my buddy Chris, our old co-host Chris Huber, we came up with the term crop dursting, where you're like going to a crowded elevator, and right as you're leaving, you just like shout out a Limp Bizkit lyric and confuse everyone. Or like walking through a crowd of people, you'll just be like, "Yeah, Limp Bizkit," and like confuse everyone.
Weirdly, I have a Chris in my life who coined the phrase craft dusting, because every time he would feel forced to go to a craft store with me, he would crop dust the entire store.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I've bombed a store before. A Hastings in Tennessee. We were going on one of our yearly trips to Arkansas, and we picked up a friend in Virginia somewhere along the way. We stayed over at his place, and his mom made breakfast for everyone with like all natural eggs, like farm grown, all natural eggs. And there were like 8 people together who all just had all natural eggs for breakfast. And we were all in the same store together. And wow, did we destroy that store.
Fart rocks are a thing. I mean, a very, very powerful thing.
It's great when you leave an aisle, you go in the next one, and then you just hear someone go, "Oh, what is that?" Oh, my Lord. That was a fun trip. So, should we talk news?
Yeah. Sure.
My big news for me is... I'm finally unpacked. I know it's supposed to be gaming news. Sorry, you guys. One more fact about me. Finally unpacked and never found my microphone. So this is the last SML that I'm going to do from the phone. And I'm just throwing this out here because we've got Bree on here tonight. She has a beautiful voice, and I'm deeply ashamed. But this is the last time. So that's all I got for news. Take it from here, y'all.
Wait, hold on. You found your microphone, or?
I never found it. I lost my microphone in the move. It's been like 2 months. I'm finally completely unpacked. I just lost it.
I was gonna say, is this like the last time you're gonna be on SML, or?
No, I've been on the phone like the last, like since I moved. And the sound quality is not dank, my dude. It's not cool.
It's not, but I figured this is like how you're gonna like blackmail Joe, like, you know, I know Thursday night sucks. if you don't get me a quote unquote review microphone, you know, I might just leave.
Review microphone, that's smart.
Yeah, why do you think I've been on the show as long as I have?
I'm gonna get Chris Taylor's old microphone and buying it off him, so it's already a done deal. The job, always happy to review products in the future, unrelated. But we're moving forward. We're moving forward with my life as of today.
Our friend Glenn Case hanging out in chat is actually going to be reviewing the Amazon Luna for us sometime eventually. He hopped in chat and he was like, hey, do you want me to review it tonight? And I looked at my review sheet. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, that's long.
We're busy tonight. We got a lineup. So we probably shouldn't waste too much more time. We should probably get into news because shut the fuck up. We have a lot of games to talk about tonight, and there's a bunch of news to discuss too. So let's start it off with Game Pass. Always good to talk about new games coming to Game Pass. It's not a huge month so far, but there's some good stuff in there. This week we got Guilty Gear Strive debuting right to Game Pass. Cool. So fighting game fans have that. Dead Space 2 and 3 hit cloud gaming. So if you are a cloud gamer, you have those to look forward to. Next week, on the 14th, we are getting Valheim to console game preview. I know a lot of people are excited about this one. It's not my cup of tea. Any of you excited for it?
Not really.
No.
It looks cool. I've never played anything in the franchise, though, personally.
Yeah, same.
So everyone's nuts about it, and no one cares about it.
I mean,
I guess we're not the target audience. I don't know.
I'm too busy with my anime dating games. Come on.
I was going to say, fair. You know what the target audience for this show is? Peppa Pig's World Adventure.
I am game so hyped year. For that. Don't
game
even.
Of the year coming out in 2 weeks. That's what's up.
But it's not on Game Pass. We're talking about Game Pass.
I don't care. Game of the year. I'm done. It's the last game I have to review for the entire year. There are no other games coming out.
Oh, good.
Good. He won't be on the show the rest of the year. That's
clears my schedule. All right.
March 16th, Sid Meier's Civilization VI is joining Game Pass.
Cool.
Nice.
And then I'm excited about this one. March 21st, Ni No Kuni 2 Revenant Kingdom launching straight to Game Pass on Xbox.
Wait, it is apparently a very difficult game, so have fun with that.
Wait, I thought it was called like the White Witch or something. No, or is that the first one? Oh, okay. Yeah. I haven't played either of them, so I don't fucking know.
All I know is they're beautiful.
They are.
They are gorgeous.
And apparently very difficult.
Yeah, like my wife, this is years ago, back when she had a PS3, she actually bought the first one and played like 20 minutes of it. And I think she was hoping it was going to be like an action adventure like Fable, and it is not. And
nope, RPG all the way.
All the way.
Yep.
I heard the difficulty is no joke. My friend Jay actually calls number two Nino, you can't.
Those games are not easy games. They're very strategy heavy and you die very easily. But they're beautiful.
I like how Aki whispers into the microphone and expects it to be picked up.
I hear
it. I don't like talking right now.
My gaping butthole.
Bree is raiding us live.
I forgot to do that earlier. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, shit, that's right. We could just like, I can earn points for shit by like pretending to watch this.
Dingleberry. Games leaving Game Pass. We got a bunch of games leaving. I believe we went over these last week, but it's good to revisit those. F1 2020 is leaving. Kentucky Route Zero is
fucking
leaving.
Yeah!
Young Souls is leaving. Undertale, Guardians of the Galaxy, Paradise Killer, the Nonary Games, and Goat Simulator, and Mr. Freight with a sub with Amazon Prime. Thank you.
Thank you, dude. Thank you, Mr. Frey, whoever you are.
Whoever strange whoever person that is. I hear he goes by the name Sausage Fingers.
No, it's Mr. Sausage
Fingers. Mr. Sausage Fingers. No, we're formal. I can just call you Sausage.
No, that was my father's name.
Shut up, Sausage.
I was about to say that was my father's name. So good.
Sausage was my father's name.
Oh
Starfield. It was finally unveiled that Starfield is releasing September 6th, so it is not making the first half of the year.
I'm still excited. The game looks like it could actually be good.
There will be a full-on Starfield Direct on June 11th after the Xbox Showcase. So they pretty much announced there's going to be an Xbox Showcase June 11th. So E3, yay.
I mean, that could be cool.
I mean, I hope they announce some good shit for this year, because they need some good shit for this year. Been too many years of like 2-3 games that, I don't know. We need something good this year. Where the hell's Forza?
In hell.
Shut up. Hogwarts Legacy on Xbox One and PS4 got a 1 month delay to May 5th.
I would almost care if I cared.
Didn't they also make a giant patch for the existing versions with like 100 fixes for things or something?
Oh, geez, did they?
Yeah.
Probably.
Wouldn't surprise me. But it's apparently setting sales records, so all those boycotts aren't doing too well.
Like always, when it comes to how people deal with this shitbag, the more you try and stop, or that just brings more tension to the piece of shit.
Speaking of delays, there are reports that Warner Brothers and Rocksteady have delayed Suicide Squad to later in the year due to the poor reception during the recent PlayStation Showcase.
Good. Maybe it'll be decent then.
Maybe they'll get rid of all the games as a service bullshit.
Nah.
No, they won't.
We could hope, but realistically, no.
We know how this is going to work.
Yeah. It's not. It'll last for a year maybe, and then they'll quit.
Speaking of things quitting, Aki, you have some news. I know that.
Yeah. Sadly, the devs over at Linceworks are closing their doors in April. They created the Origami games, which are probably my favorite, if not in my top favorites of stealth games. They were making some new IPs, but they ran out of money and time, so none of those are getting completed, sadly, and they know they're closing the doors sometime in April, and it's a shame, because their games were really good, and I was looking forward to the next game that they were making.
Yeah, it's always a bummer to see good studio shut down, but...
Yeah, that was one of my favorite indie devs. So,
I mean, sucks. You know, maybe they'll take some of those ideas that they were working on to like a different, you know, game dev, and like maybe they'll get to thrive there. I mean, it could be like a situation of like Crimson Skies, like the devs for that, like they went out of business, sold the IP to their next company that they created for a dollar, and then just went right back to work. So yeah,
I'm just hoping that the company gets revived sometime in the future, because the Origami games are fantastic. I cannot suggest that enough to people who like stealth games. They are the best ones I've played. So I really hope that they come back. I know it's not very likely, but I'm hoping that at some point in the future they will get funds together and revive and hopefully make another Origami game.
Hopefully. Yeah, it'd be nice, but unfortunately it doesn't look like that'll be the case, but well. Some more sad news. Lemnis Gate. That is shutting down July 11th.
That was the Portal...
I think that's the Portal FPS, shooter, right? Yeah. The game will be delisted April 11th, so if you have any passing interest in the game, grab it now, complete it by July 11th, because that is when it is going away for good.
That's a shame. I heard people were really into that game. I'm surprised it's closing.
Yeah. Sony 7.0 update hit the PS5, bringing with it VRR support, the variable refresh rate, and Discord voice chat. So they now have Discord voice chat on PS5 and on Xbox. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We should test it. Who has a PS5?
Not me.
Not me.
Don't you have one, Joe?
Yeah, but I'm doing this.
I know Chris Taylor has one.
All the guys who aren't on the show have Chris Chris Purnell and Tim all have the PS5.
I mean, if you want to give me the money to buy a PS5, I will buy one.
I'll be our next fundraiser.
No, I need a better computer before I need a damn PS5.
I need an Xbox before I need a PS5, or like, I'm pretty sure I have to commit seppuku on the show or whatever. So
yeah, we gotta get you on the Xbox team.
I'm so ready. Last time I had one, it was a 360 and it broke and I just never replaced. And I've been saying I'm going to replace it for like a year now. So
do you still have the 360 that broke?
No.
I was going to say, actually, now that I think about it, I think I still have my Trashbox 360. So if you want me to send you that, I could.
I wish I had whatever shall remain, because I had some like old saves on there that I'm realistically never going to revisit. But you know how that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I have my 360 connected to my TV right now.
It's right here in front of me. I can reach out and touch it.
Yep.
I still have a PS2 memory card sitting on my shelf that I didn't sell My Guitar Man saves are on there.
I still have my PS2 in the other room. So
you have Guitar Man?
No, I have all the JRPGs though, like that's why I can't get rid of it, because they haven't put them out everywhere. Some of them are out now, but not all of them, and I can't let go.
Yeah, I would like it if my PS2 still worked. They stopped working years and years and years ago. I still have both of them. They're both still connected. Neither of them work, and I knew that before I connected them. But
then why are they connected?
Because I was hoping maybe if I connect them long enough, maybe they'll start working again.
Why are they both connected?
You just need to blow on them. You just need to blow on them.
Both of them are connected because I had room to connect both of those and my N64 and my Super Nintendo, and still have room to connect more shit.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I have a 72-inch in that room, and it's one of the old, like 150-pound heavy fuckers that had like 50 billion plugins in the back.
Nice.
So yeah, everything's fucking connected into that bitch.
I hear choo-choo.
We've got a train going.
That's a train going by. I live a house away from a railroad track. Choo-choo. So.
I grew up all my life living next to railroad tracks, so it does nothing to me.
Yeah, I lived about a block away from here for a good chunk of my life, and ever since I bought this house, obviously, I've been a house away from it, so... I barely register it.
I just love that every time you go to talk, he's honking.
Yeah. Awesome. That's the one thing I would really like if they fucking quit with that, but
no.
He doesn't want to tell him to stop, so.
It gives like a wistfulness to your background. It kind of adds some nostalgic emotion in there somehow.
I mean, I think legally when they approach street crossings, they have to blow the horn.
Mm-hmm. They don't have to. They do it, especially when there's not one of the gate lowering railroad track stoppers, in order to warn people. However, cities and townships can actually tell it don't do that in this area. You can petition them to tell the railroads not to do it, but then they have to actually do that. And that's a lot of effort, and I've never felt it was really worth it, even though that noise is very loud and very annoying, and I don't like it. For a while,
rail departments don't care about work and effort either, based on all the derailings we've seen lately.
Yeah, and the companies that had all the shit derailed and stuff, they specifically have fought against upgrades to the brakes and repairing the lines and stuff. So they knew it was going to happen, and then it happened, and they're like, how could this happen? I don't know.
People, my cat is chewing a box behind me. I'm like, what the hell is that noise? He's just chewing a box, biting it and ripping it. Last bit of news I have is Capcom held a little press event today, and they showed off some Mega Man Battle Network and showed some news about that. It's not coming to Xbox, so fuck him.
Is it coming to Steam at least?
Yes.
Okay.
And Switch.
Switch, PS, and it's coming to everything but Xbox. So, yay. The Resident Evil 4 Chainsaw demo is available now.
Yep. Tell me how that is, because I know you have it installed. I don't.
It is scary as fuck.
Oh, you've already played it? Have you beaten it yet?
No, I played about 15 minutes of it, and one of the guys grabbed me, and I was like, well, I could either fight him off, or I could watch a death scene. So I watched the death scene.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Is it super gory?
Yeah.
Yes.
Fabulous. I want to see it.
Yeah.
I just want to know if you get, like, after you beat it, if there's, like, use this save and you get a free item. I don't think there's anything. That's a shame.
Yeah.
I like when they do that. It's dumb, but it's cool.
Yeah. They announced Ghost Trick Phantom Detective will release June 30th on Switch, PS4, PC, and Xbox. So Xbox can get Ghost Trick, but not Mega Man Battle Network. Like, what the hell, Capcom? What is hell's going through?
Ghost Trick does look kind of interesting, though, at least.
It does. It's just, it's so niche. I never thought it would come to Xbox, but something big like Mega Man, no.
Yeah.
Bastards. Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak expansion is going to be hitting consoles April 28th.
What was that?
Fast.
The Sunbreak expansion for Monster Hunter Rise.
Damn, that is fast.
I mean, it's already available on Switch, so it was just a matter of bringing it to console.
Ah.
Yeah. Let's not forget, Monster Hunter Rise has been on the Switch for quite a while.
Huh. Okay, I did not remember that.
Yeah, it just came to PlayStation and Xbox recently, but it's been on Switch for quite some time.
Okay.
Yeah. And then last bit of news I have from the Capcom event is that Exo Primal is slated to release July 14th. And the big thing is it's going to be day one Game Pass.
What is that game exactly?
Online shooter action thing.
Okay.
I don't know. I probably won't play it, but day one Game Pass means I could if I want.
Yeah, that's always nice. It gives people an ability to try a game at the very least to see if they want to buy it later.
What news do y'all have? Any other news?
Oh, God.
No, I just had the Depresso Espresso news. So.
The Depresso Espresso?
Yeah, that's the only news I had. I
haven't heard that before.
Yeah, no, it is pretty amusing, actually.
Jacob, anything on your end?
I mean, did you announce about, or did you talk about Hulu's soda?
What?
What?
Yeah, Coca-Cola is debuting a new lime ginger soda called Hulu Surprise from Fanta for Hulu's 15th anniversary.
Whoa.
Does it taste like shit and disappointment?
I don't drink soda. I wouldn't know, man.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
About what?
About you not drinking soda.
Oh, yeah. I've never liked soda. I don't like the fizziness.
Word. Okay. Okay.
You should always make it go flat.
I don't like it then either. Like, it it's just this, like, weird sugary junk that I just don't like.
Do you not like sugary? Do you like sugary candy and stuff?
I mean, I love gummies. Like, I have no doubt in my mind it's going to lead me to an early grave of diabetes. But
they don't taste sugary, though.
They taste true
disappointment.
I'm sorry. What?
Gummies taste like disappointment.
Shut your whore mouth.
I hate gummies.
Shut up. I don't care. I hate you.
Yeah.
Any actual news?
You know, I knew that there was a reason I really didn't like you deep down.
Oh my god. We're going so deep in the lore of this game of the show now.
All right. Anyway, Counter-Strike is reportedly getting a major update soon. Like, as in, I believe that they said that they think that they're completely redoing. It's migrating the game to the Source 2 engine.
Hmm.
And it could supposedly could happen as early as this month. And now, like, after I read that, I was just like, I wonder if that's why it got delisted on Xbox. Like, maybe they're going to re-release it on Xbox with, like, the new thing and just maybe that's why they got rid of the old one.
Maybe.
Or maybe Valve just doesn't give a shit about Xbox anymore. I mean, there's maybe that one too.
Or maybe they're just old and they're not getting any profit or any worthwhile profit, and it's not worth keeping them up anymore.
It's not worth keeping you up anymore.
Yeah, I know.
You're like, I'm going to go to bed. Shut up.
Goddamn right I do. Can't stand
Tom
you.
Tom Sizemore passed away. He had voice acting roles in Grand Theft Auto Vice City and 24 The Game, and acted in the Company of Heroes game, in case you didn't know that was a thing. It's like a lower B movie, World War II movie. Like, it's okay as long as you don't know anything about actual history.
Most people, it's okay then.
Yeah, that's the thing, because it's just like, it's like, you know, it's set in like, I don't know, like 1944, and like the Germans are using stuff that they would like wasn't even available till like 1950. Like, it's that level of crap.
You're a dork.
So we got some news bits from chat. City Skylines 2 is going to be on Game Pass day one, so that's cool.
Excuse me. I was about to talk about how YouTubers can now swear at the start of their videos again without getting demonetized. So fuck yeah.
They say so. I don't fucking believe that at all.
Yeah, well, we need to test it.
No, we don't. Grim Guardians Demon's Purge is changing its name to Gal Guardians Demon Purge. It's assuming it is over some copyright issue with another Grim Guardians that's
no
in existence.
There's a game called Grim Guard. One word.
That's that seriously what it's that. About?
Yeah. I don't know what it's God. About at all. But
there is like an esports company called Grim Guardians. Like, because I found their shit when I was trying to do tweets last time. And then so like after the announcement of like, oh, there's a lawsuit, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But okay. That's weird. That's something else.
Just something that that's Grim Guard, and so they decided to change their name. I don't think the names are similar enough that they really have to worry about that, honestly, but better safe than sorry, I guess.
I guess.
And I bet you it'll be out before too long, unlike the other company that had that claimed, oh, this is going to take us like 6 months to do. I don't even remember the name of the... Yeah, there was another company that did that with their game. They're like, oh, now suddenly this other company has a copyright, so we're putting our game off until November now. I forgot what the game was.
Oh,
it was that. It's that about. Vaporware that's never going to come the fuck out, but I don't remember the name of it.
I remember that being discussed, but I don't like, yeah, I don't remember literally anything about it, but that does sound familiar.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show before.
I don't remember what we talked about on the show. I don't listen to it.
Did you hear that? Aki recalls the conversation we had.
Yeah, I can recall most of the conversations I've had on here.
I love this love-hate relationship between Aki and Jacob. I love that we come full circle.
Well, that's not love-hate. That's I remember just most things that involve me.
Damn it. I know, but she remembers
hate, slightly less hate.
Yes.
See, but and I think it was just, you know, she's remembering the stuff so that she has a handy dandy list for the court case later when one of them gets, you know, murdered or something. Like,
all right. That's don't what I'm talking about. Thinking ahead.
This episode is evidence now. Should it's we get to reviews?
Yes, sure.
I reckon.
Unless there's movie news.
We miss Jacob. He was voted most likely to be found in three different dumpsters.
If only.
First if game.
Go ahead.
No, just get it out.
Yeah, I promise you they wouldn't. You'd be in significantly more than three dumpsters and they'd never find enough of you.
I mean, I don't.
There's so much of me to go around. That's what I heard. Thanks.
I love you.
I mean, you could, but I think they would just like cut you in half once and then be like, fuck this, leave half of you there, cut the other half of you in half, throw them in separate dumpsters, and there's your three parts.
And you have to throw them into separate dumpsters, or the pieces can come back together, and he can come back to life, dude. Yeah. Everybody knows this. Everybody knows this shit about vampires.
Segue. He's not that cool.
Vampires are the Terminator, right? They're the same thing, right?
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
Okay, first game to talk about tonight is called Romancevania, developed by the Deep End Games, published by 2124 Publishing, released March 7th on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Take a bite into Romancevania, a darkly comic genre mashup combining side-scrolling action and tongue-in-cheek romance into one completely absurd and unforgettable adventure. Aki, Brooke, Bree, Jacob, everyone played this. Who wants to start?
Jacob played too. I'll start if y'all want.
I did play it.
Oh, dude. I'm pumped. Okay. Well, I fucking love this game. That's the first line I have written in my notes here. Just to set the scene, you're playing as Drac, your choice of male or female, fully voiced either way. Drac is a cool vampire who's very goth and has been brooding in a castle for like a zillion years. You've literally been in there just vibing. Missing your ex from long ago who betrayed you and being just super morose. But one day you get a note. The boys are back in town. They want to get together for a round of poker, just like old times. Man, you have been so sad in your vampire castle all these years, crying about whatever happened with homegirl. That sounds great. Maybe this would be worth going outside for a bit. So you finally leave your vampire castle man cave to go join the boys, but it's a setup. Grim, presumably, Brooke, the Grim Reaper, someone you've known for a really long time, shows up and is like, listen, dude, it's fucked. You need to be coming out the castle. You need to handle these things again. Hundreds of years or whatever is enough. Things are a mess. We need you, dude. And I know just the thing that's going to help us find you a new partner so you can get over it, start living again. A reality TV dating show that Grim will host. It's a lot like The Bachelor, where you will meet hot singles in your vampire castle to get to know. This is the last thing you want to do right now. As Drac, you are pissed, but Grim is literally going to destroy the world unless you agree to do a season of the show. So unfortunately, completely against your will, you are now on a mission to find the sexiest monsters from around the world, convince them to move into your mansion for a reality TV show, where you're basically the prize. So now, welcome to Love at First Bite, the show where the world's sexiest monsters will compete for your affection. Drama, romance, and hilarity will ensue. This is a direct quote from the game. But that's not all. It's not just a dating game. It's also an incredibly beautiful and smooth Metroidvania game. And it's actually fun as fuck. What the heck? How is this even possible? I'm now going to mute myself and just scream wordlessly while we hand this over to y'all for a minute. Be right back.
Aki, what do you have to say?
I love this game.
I think I will let everyone else go first because I think I probably got the furthest into the game. So I'll let everyone else go first.
Okay, Bree, what do you want to say about the game?
I have no idea how to follow up that intro. So I got to play through like a chapter and a half last night and let other people make bad choices because that's what happens over at my house. And awesome. And yeah, no, and we got to choose Femme Drac because I knew that was going to happen based on who was there at the beginning of this, right? I'm going to start another file this weekend because you can have like 3 save files, I think, and I'm going to just go ahead and start one with like male Drac just because I want to see if like anything changes and
for achievements you have to play it through with both, anyways.
Well, see, there you go. Ooh. So I'm just starting on the achievement path. It's fine, but also because I want to make some better choices with you know, who gets recruited and who gets kicked off, because I want to see like what else happens with our ex, you know, snake-headed hottie. I never was able
to find stream every time an option came, someone picked something, and you're like, really?
Oh my gosh, it's so, well, it's like my favorite Bad News Bears are just like, they're there to make the worst decisions possible and get us killed, or just like, I mean, really, that's the whole goal. But so, like,
I have a question for you. Did your people choose to kick Medusa in, I'm going to say this and everyone's going to immediately know why you kicked this one, instead of Brocifer? Are you kidding me?
I knew I wasn't going to be able to sway them to boot, you know, our Jersey Devil, but also I was not vibing with Medusa. I'm going to be super honest. So I was okay if that was a choice, because we were keeping Bess. Like that, we were keeping
everyone keeps
that was gonna, Bess. Right. I was, she's the only one who I even finished a quest for in the first episode, because I was super dumb with that. I loved that I got to have dinner and it was all like, neither of us eat. Yay. Something stupid to connect over.
Oh my god,
over.
I love that. Vess is my favorite right now, but I haven't met the pumpkin lady yet, as y'all know.
Yeah, and that was my whole goal. I needed to get to PSL. That was very important. And I struggled a lot during the boss fight there, but, we got through it, and I'm really ready to sink my teeth into the rest of this over the weekend. So
nice.
Oh, sink your teeth. Your teeth. Little vampire. We're like freaking out.
Okay, Jacob, what's your opinions on it? How far did you get?
So I got to the end of the first episode, or whatever you refer to. I got rid of Brosifer. Yeah, well, he was all the thing was is that like I chose a female Drac, and pretty much I just went in with everybody. Like I wasn't really gonna go for plot, but it was just who I actually connected or who I felt like I connected with. And honestly, Brosifer, I thought was like, I mean, maybe he gets better writing if you keep him around for later on. I don't know, but I wasn't willing to waste my time and find out.
The correct choice.
You didn't want that Brodong.
No, yeah, I thought he was I just thought he was a very like boringly written character, so I didn't keep him around.
Well, no, I thought his stereotype was very on brand. Like,
yes. he is the dude brodiest dude bro that ever and he's
but
awful.
In his defense, he was the first one to ask Femdrak how she felt about all of this, and that's really important.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, but then if you take him on the on one of the dates, he talks about how his life is these three initials, and all of them end with basically, you know,
blinking.
And all I wanted to do was take a hammer and smash his fucking head in the entire fucking time.
Yeah, I wanted to rip that sensor bar off and beat him with it. I agree.
Yeah, that sensor bar was dangerous. I did not like it. Because instead of a black bar, which is what some of you might expect, it was a mosaic.
Yeah.
And I had to get rid, even if it weren't for his god-awful fucking personality that just makes you want to kill him. That was also incredibly dangerous for me, just because when you moved in any area where he is, that pixelation obviously moves because it's blurring his, he's naked. So it's blurring obvious. And, that's not safe for, people like me who have seizures to stuff. So I was like, no, I didn't realize
mosaic effect would be an issue. That's weird.
I didn't think it would be either, because I've never played a game that had that kind of mosaic. I've read stuff that has mosaics, but the whole thing of it moving around on the screen, that screwed me up. Granted, his entire area where he is, he's in a fucking rave joint, and that area just isn't a particularly great area for me. I got rid of him too, because that's the correct choice. He's a douche.
Well, I kept him because I watched a lot of reality dating competition TV trash, and I like
the one that we get rid of.
We've always got our token Jersey boy in there. I just finished Perfect Match. I have my boy Joey in there. You know, Brosifer kind of made me feel a little more comfortable. I like Medusa's vibe, but like you and I were discussing, even though I thought she has a bomb voice actress, it just wasn't really my jam, so I kept him around for the comedy he was bringing, and voted Medusa off, but my eyes are still fully on Vess right now, and Brosifer is just a bro to me.
Brosifer is terrible.
Bruh.
He is terrible.
How many bruh out of dudes do you give this?
Oh,
wait, hold on.
We've barely talked about the game.
What the hell? All we're doing is just talk about our choices.
Yeah. I have some problems with the game. Do any of you have any issues with the game?
I mean, yeah, I do, which I was about to talk about before you rudely interrupted me, Aki. All right, so I fully admit, like, when we had the devs on the show, I barely talked during that interview, because first off, I went into the interview without really knowing what the game was about. It was just like, Joe's just like, oh, here it is. Look at this Steam page and prepare to have questions. And I'm like, I don't. Uh-huh. But as they talked about it, I was just like, I don't understand how this game would even work. And like, I didn't want to sound dumber on the interview than I already did. and so honestly, like, it wasn't until I started playing this that I was like, okay, so it's Castlevania with, like, instead of like the dialogue portions in between like certain action scenes when you find a certain character, it's like it's a visual novel and you move on with that. And I was just like, okay, cool, this kind of works. But then do you ever get a fucking map in this game?
No.
Oh, fuck that. Like, seriously? No, that's bullshit. Like, because I'm trying to fucking wander around this damn mansion, like, trying to figure out where the hell I'm supposed to be going next. And, like, I'm looking for a map, and I'm like, oh, maybe I'll get a map on episode 2. Hopefully.
Nope.
Yeah, so, like, you know how many times I just wandered around trying to find, like, the backstage area and stuff like that?
Would you like to know where it is? It's in the area that has the big letters above it called backstage.
No shit. Like, but the thing is that getting from point A to point B isn't the easiest thing, especially in a Castlevania game.
You eventually learn your way through it, though.
No, you don't. Well, I don't anyway. because I've got really fucking terrible, like, spatial awareness when it comes to, like, maps and all that kind of crap. So it's just, I was having problems navigating it, and... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, other than that, like, I was really impressed with this game. Like, I thought it was fairly unique. Yeah, I don't know. That was really, like, the only issue, but it was glaring.
Right.
That is an issue that I have seen repeated numerous times on the Steam forums as well. Mm-hmm. So I can't even just blame that on you. I don't find it hard to get around there at all, personally. But
yeah, and I noticed that as well. And I thought it was a little weird to not be there because I was expecting it to be more expansive, but I don't know that I felt the maps were as big as they might be to need that map. So maybe that was like a time or cost cutting measure to, you know, that they felt maybe they could get away with. And
chapter does add some new areas, both to the castle and the surrounding area, but none of the areas are.
But you can also fast travel once you unlock those if you go to the confessional seat. And I thought that that was kind of a nice touch as far as being able to. Yeah. So that makes it a little easier to at least get around to the major locations. And there's like the big map there. You can at least kind of see how that lays out. But as far as the internal map, I didn't think it was too bad. I thought they left enough like landmarks and signs and things to help me navigate, visually.
Other than the mini map for the people who need it, I can think of some other things I would like added to the game, just because there are some annoyances I have with how the game plays.
Like
namely, throughout this, you can bring different people on dates, but every location where you can do a date only allows you to take, obviously, certain characters there. They're the ones scripted to be able to go on that date, but it only allows you to take a certain number of them there even. So five people might be able to take this date. It'll only let you do like three of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can't take anyone ever on that date again, even if you find someone much later in the game who can go on that date. That's it's gone. It's over. You can't take them anymore, which is really irritating. I don't like that. Because they're how you get to know each individual character. You take them on date and then you ask questions and you sometimes interact with them a little bit more with your own choices, but it gives you a lot more about who they are. And not being able to take everyone on all the ones that they're able to go on, I hate that. So I would like in like a new game plus to be allowed to one, keep all the people, because I don't like ejecting people from it, because I want to get to know everybody and then make my choice at the end, which one I want to be with, whatever, I don't care. But I'd like to keep them all around just so I can get to know them. And because your romance meter, which you build up by talking to them, taking them on dates, drinking with them, doing little quests for them occasionally, raises the romance meter. And when that happens, it unlocks upgrades that you can buy with hearts that you get for each time the romance meter reaches max, which raises the romance by one. You get to spend those hearts to buy upgrades, and some of the upgrades require you to have this level of romance with this character. When you kick them off, guess what? If your romance wasn't that high, you don't get to buy that ability ever.
Mm.
You've locked yourself right the fuck out. I know, because Brosifer one of his was to get him to level 7.
7, yeah, I saw that.
And that takes you until at least the end of Act 2 before that's even possible. So I kicked myself out of having two different updates from him, because you have to keep him around, and no one's keeping his ass around. So it's I would like a new game plus that allowed you to keep all of your dates and not kick them off, and let you go to each end of these individual areas, because while, yes, the game is fun, restarting it means you're going to lose all your abilities, your damage is going to be dog shit, you're going to have to buy gifts and buy awards, which give you a bonus to your damage, which you need in order to fight enemies and bosses. You're going to have to do all that again. And while it's fun the first time through, I don't want to do that like 6 times to get to the end 6 times so I can choose between two different people, which is how I assume it's going to end is, oh, you've brought these two to the end of the game. Now you have to pick one. And I think there's an achievement for choosing each individual. So that's at least 6 entire playthroughs.
Yeah.
And I don't, the game's fun. It's not play it 6 fucking times fun. That's a lot. And there's no real way to like make a save and be like, okay, I choose this, because like the first group is just 3 people and you have to kick someone out. And the next group is another 3 people. Then you have to kick 2 people out. And then the last group is 5 people. And I'm pretty sure you're going to have to kick 3 or 4 out at that point. That's a lot of save you have to make. And then you still have to play a whole good chunk of the game again anyways. So just starting fresh at that point isn't really going to make you lose anything than maybe like 30 minutes, which...
So completionists won't enjoy this one.
Yeah, so I'd like a new game plus just to allow you to take everyone on all the dates and not kick them off until the very end, like the end of the game. I would like a new game plus to do that, basically, just so you can see everything and do everything in the game on a serious note. I think that would be more fun, because then you get to meet all the characters fully by going on all their dates, because then you're able to go on all the dates with everyone, and you get to really get to know them instead of playing through it like 10, 12, 14, 80 times to get to see every individual thing. I would like that in a new game plus, because I don't really want to play through it a whole bunch of times over and over and over, because the combat part isn't going to be very fun after the first time.
I think that's valid. I love that idea for a new game plus. I think that if they're going to make an update like that, that'd be the perfect place to put it. I know we went really hard in the interview with them about how, like, what games they like, and that they were really trying to encourage replayability. I think we got a lot of food for thought with that one, and I'm not sure if they considered it that way. But I know like Amanda likes Dragon Age games and stuff, like, where you're probably not going to play it 6 or 12 times and get with all the characters. Maybe this is more of an intentional choice on their part to kind of keep it special, but do you think that's valid as heck? And I think Jacob's complaint is valid too. Maybe it's just me. I don't think it's that easy to get lost after chapter 1 because of the sort of having to get the lay of the land and fast traveling. But what do y'all think, ladies?
I forgot there was a fast travel, to be honest. I've never used it. I
proud of you.
Still right now, I know where everything is in there. I don't get lost.
Yeah.
I'm proud too. I get lost every time, as y'all know. So
I have really good spatial awareness, though. Like, amazing spatial awareness. So I remember all the maps. So
yeah, I'm pretty good with the spatial awareness too. So that was not as big a factor for me. But I also like the tiny bit of time saving, because like the enemies do respawn.
You constantly need money, so I go through the enemies every time.
Well, right, because you have the little bats with the little purple gems of goodies or whatever. It was really helpful to go back through certain sections, kind of running back and forth. It didn't bother me for that reason as well. But, going to growing wood or whatever, like I can kind of skip around there without having to go through all the castle and all the castle grounds and whatever.
Yeah, so. But also after you get pretty far into episode 2, you also unlock a couple areas where you can buy other items, like upgrades for yourself. Like you can buy a few awards, you can buy gifts that you can give people to help raise their stuff, And none of that shit's cheap. Because you might get, you know, in the castle, you might get, like, anywhere between $1 and, like, $12 on occasion from defeating something. If you open a chest, you might get, like, 40. Other areas, you might get, like, 50 gold for breaking some bat hearts. But items cost, like, 200, 250 when it comes to upgrade items, like the stuff I mentioned. There's also the smaller stuff, like you have a little bat that follows you that has a spotlight on you as part of the show.
Oh my god, what is he called again?
You can turn that on and off, by the way, in case neither of you realize that you can turn off that light. There's no point in turning it off, but...
I forget what he's called.
What is his name again? It's so cute. I forgot.
I didn't know the bat had a name, to be honest.
He does. It's like Batty something.
Oh, like a pun. Yeah. Or the bat pun. God.
Huh. That's right. I didn't know that.
Edge of my brain.
Which actually was one of my, like, I kind of like covered my mouth and threw myself off camera because I was laughing so hard the first time I gave it a treat. And it was totally the flash dance, but blood. Like, where you pull the chain and, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the best.
I've used that once, and that's the only one I've used, and I was just like, oh, my health's really bad, and I was like, I don't know what these do, so let's use it, and that was fantastic.
Yeah,
I loved it.
A lot of games that try to be funny with, like, lots of pop culture references aren't usually actually laugh-out-loud funny to me, but I actually thought this, game's pretty funny.
There were definitely some funny and intelligent, you know, jokes in there, for sure.
Yeah.
And then there's Brosifer. They go for both highbrow and some of the lowest to low possible.
I'm going to guess you didn't like Brosifer, but it sounds like everyone liked... Okay, shut up. It sounds like everyone liked the actual game. It's $24.99. I need a verdict from everyone.
Buy it.
Yo,
buy it.
Get it, because it's going to be the next big thing.
Buy it. Yeah.
No, I think it was really good. My final, like, thing I want to share about this game really quick is just, like, I love the idea for this game. I didn't know if I would like it that much in execution. I just really wanted to support them because I thought it was so fucking cool, but I didn't think I'd like the Metroidvania part. But I actually really enjoyed the gameplay of that. And I thought it was really fun. Just gotta throw that out there.
Cool. Anyone else? Anything? Or can we move on?
We can move on.
It's been like 30 minutes talking about one game.
No, when you have four people who reviewed it, you're gonna have to deal with it.
Don't you regret
giving me a code?
No. So I just sat here cleaning my pipe the whole time.
I saw you. You were clipping your ball hairs.
It wasn't funny in text chat, and it wasn't funny here either. Next game to talk about is Horus, developed by Paul Hellman and Sean Scoppelhorn, published by 505 Games, released February 28th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4 and PS5 for $14.99. Horus is a huge platforming adventure which pushes the boundaries of the genre with a profound story of a small robot learning of life, the universe, and Doug Adams. Made by video game lovers for video game lovers. Bree, tell us about your time with Horus.
So first of all, Brooke unknowingly just gave a really good segue in here with that last comment about pop culture references not always being done well. And that is going to be a thing I'm going to talk about a lot in here. And I want to apologize first off. One, I have a lot to say. Two, this might sound a little scripted because I wrote a really deep framework of notes so that I wouldn't ramble on for hours and also not leave anything out. And I talk really fast when I'm excited, so I figured this was easier for me to slow down a little and tell you all the good things, unlike last time where I just, like, word vomited at high speed. So, granted, I'd also been pumped full of steroids right before. So, I mean, we can just blame it on that, right?
Sure.
All right. So, so let me just tell you, like, a little bit about my experience with the game first loading up. The first thing that happens when you load up the game is you get greeted with the dev logo, a Paul Hellman production. But it's reminiscent of the Thames TV production identification. If you guys know what I'm talking about, if you don't, it's like, even over in the States, well, it's like the devs are British. So, like, this makes sense that they might spoof the Thames logo, but it's like, you know, a little bit of London and it's kind of rising up out of a reflection. And there's this little brassy, like, dun, 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 dun. And like, if you ever watched Danger Mouse on Nickelodeon, like if you're old enough for that thing, you probably heard the Thames logo at the end of every episode. So you've probably seen it, whether you realize it or not. The company's been around forever, right? So then you get to like the main loading screen, and there is this beautiful dark digital rendition of the first movement of the Moonlight Sonata. And like, I'm already peaked at this point, like knowing the game description about pop culture references, like, okay, this is going to be a ride. So as for the game itself, it's, I think, harder to describe than it might at first come across. So it's a story-driven, retro-style, pixel platformer adventure game, which sounds like a lot, but it gets worse in a good way. So as you progress into the game, you realize that like almost no game genre is left untouched at some point. There's racing scenes, rhythm games, JRPGs, shmups, like everything. And the deeper you dive into the story, the more references you're going to find to pop culture, cinema, classic literature, and music. And like, we've seen games and movies, just like Brooke was saying, like who've tried to lean on the nostalgia a lot, and it feels maybe cheap, like the movie adaptation of Ready Player One. But Horus makes every single reference feel natural and part of the story. And I found myself playing like this extra meta game about figuring out why these references were so important to the story, because everything is intentional. Because at its core, Horus is really an existential surrealist tale that I feel really is attempting to make the player question things about how we view our world and modern history. And like, this totally hit a nerd button for me. And while it did that for me and engaged me on a deeper level, I feel like you can still enjoy it at the surface level for just its comedy and nostalgia. And it's a two dev team. So we've got Paul Hellman, Sean Scaphorn, and I have no idea what else they've done, but apparently they took about 7 years to make this, and you can tell all of the love and passion they put into every pixel. And I was just like, I'm so happy that this is available on consoles now. And I found out when I was talking about it last night how many people have played this game, like I'm seeing in the chat. And like, oh my God, that's like my favorite game ever. It's my favorite game of such and such. And I totally understand why. So the story is told through our robotic voiced narration of our robot hero, Horus, who starts out being brought to life in an almost like Frankenstein's monster kind of thing. And we're greeted by our kindly creator. And then we start out immediately like learning to do basic things like walk and jump in a series of like, I'll call them story driven. I'm going to say that a lot. Tutorial levels. But they actually feel important to the story and not just like, hey, we made this animated instruction manual. And like the first, say, hour or so of the story is pretty on rails. There's lots of cutscenes and whatever, but like that also makes a lot of sense because Horus is programmed, like he's a robot, and the only thing he knows is what's given to him in terms of programming and the experiences like directly in his controlled environment. So we get new abilities and then we do little trial runs with them, and that's kind of our whole tutorial section. But it makes sense as part of the story. I totally forgot I was in a tutorial section. So from there, like, you know, he's a robot, and we have to keep that in mind because also this is like a coming of age story, and he's got this whole childlike innocence, but the like the influences of his world and the people around him are really primed to change him for better or for worse. Like, we can, you know, we can relate to that as humans, and that's, you know, kind of what this is about, that contrast. And so we get all these different cutscenes to kind of build up the different characters and our family, and it looks like some combination between like the exposition at the beginning of some movie or like the lineup of a charming mystery story about a family where someone dies and there's a plot to steal all the inheritance. I couldn't tell when it was like which side they were going at first. It turns out they were just trying to introduce all the family of characters that are going to be involved in Horus's life. But, you know, this whole story is about him learning to be. And at first, people are pretty apprehensive. Like, it's a robot. He could harm people. He has to earn the hearts and minds of the people. And so, unfortunately, something bad happens. But hey, that gives him a great opportunity to go rescue someone and be the big damn hero. And people start to change their minds. Like, maybe he's not so bad. Maybe we don't need to be afraid of him. Meanwhile, we have these kind of montages of scenes kind of setting the stage. We've got some sinister foreshadowing in the background of what's going on. And then one day he goes and has a really deep conversation about life, the universe, and Douglas Adams, no, seriously, direct quote, with his creator about his purpose in life. And at first, he's like not satisfied at all with the answer. So instead, he's giving something more concrete. Go clean 1 million things. And now we have goals for the game. Right after that happens, something big, and I don't want to spoil it, causes Horus to shut down. And
his battery ran out after cleaning a million things.
No, we haven't even gotten a million things yet.
Oh god.
So I don't wanna ruin the shock because it's a big emotional moment. But it's the sort of thing that would break us as people, like where we emotionally shut down. But here we have this robot and it kind of
makes me emotionally shut down.
What?
When someone drops a sub in chat. Trash Rando, thank you so much for dropping a sub for the fourth month. Love having you here. Always good seeing you in chat. You don't break me down emotionally. I thank you from the bottom of my heart for the sub. Bree, what else?
All right. So yeah, Horus shuts down. Like, he won't function. They try to, like, put some, you know, software patches in, and everybody tries stuff while we're kind of going through this montage, and it's clear after a little while he's done, he's shut off, and he's never going to work again. His battery maybe kind of runs down a little, and he gets put into storage and forgotten about. And it's unclear how long he's down there in this, like, mental coma, but one day he wakes up. And the world has changed, and it's broken and twisted and full of holes, and we've got to navigate that to find our family, what happened to our friends, and serve our purpose in life to clean a million things. And this is where the game really opens up into, like, a Metroidvania experience. So now we have this, like, big open world meta kind of thing where we get to go and explore, and as we, you know, get little bits of plot, we get keys to unlock areas, we get new skills to get to different areas, and so on. So, like, the core of the gameplay mechanic at this point ultimately is platforming. But in order to get through all these stages, going through locations with, like, this broken, war-torn world of lasers and electric fences and security systems and unexploded ordnance and all the trash that we get to clean up, like, it's a lot of platforming. But you've just gotten through these basics of, like, running and jumping and opening doors and all this. But yeah, I know, right? But, like, the world turns upside down and sideways and all around, like, think Braid. And you have to start looking at it really differently. We're not just, like, jumping up platforms. We can literally walk on the wall and then turn the whole level with us. So, ooh. Yeah. And I have another game I'll mention, like, a little bit later, kind of, that relates to this as well. So it's, and you've got, like, these robot upgrades that allow you to do these cool things, walking on the ceiling and all that. But it gets really challenging at that point. And I started to experience some almost Meat Boy level of frustration. but you do have endless resurrections thanks to the Lazarus program installed into Horus. And there is an achievement for 1,000 deaths, which geez. I think will totally come naturally by the end of the
game. I'll get that in 5 minutes.
Right. And, but thankfully, also, the checkpoints are usually fairly generous. And at a certain point, you unlock, like, a shield ability. And if you start doing really poorly in a section, the game will, like, ding, give you an extra shield to help you out through the section, which is really nice. But like, as it got challenging, I had to stop and think about why. Because everything in this game is intentional, right? So when we're talking about retro games, and I realized that if I looked at the platforming as more of a puzzle instead of rushing it, kind of like Fez. Right? I think that's my other game comparison here.
Oh my god.
Cool. It got a little bit, you know, like you're flipping around the bits of the world and you got to think about it in different dimensions a little bit. That was kind of a better way to look at it than just, like, running and jumping and trying to, you know, get over obstacles that are trying to saw and electrocute and whatever. But the other thing I was initially frustrated with was the control scheme for running and jumping seemed really awkward. And then I thought about it and I looked at it in my Xbox controller. And I was like, okay, it's a run on X, jump on A. It's the control scheme for Mario on an NES controller. And then suddenly, like, okay, this is like another, this was not a bad design choice. This was done on purpose. And I just had to get myself in that right mindset between those two things. And suddenly, like, I didn't care as much. I could kind of relax into the platforming. And even, like, the really challenging bits didn't seem to bother me as much. Genres of games. Talking about that. So there's different ways that they bring other genres into the game. So some of it, like when you get into that open world, there's lots of different places to explore. There's a lot to explore. Oh my goodness. So there's like arcades with consoles that you can play. There's some weird little sections that are crammed into like plot segments that you're platforming through where you'll have to do other like mini games. You can get side jobs in the different towns that you get to, which are all little mini games. And they help you buy upgrades and fund your exploration and stuff like that. One of my favorite jobs was a rhythm dish drying mini game where a bunch of old ladies throw dishes at you to music. There's a Guitar Hero arcade console.
You said that they throw dishes at you?
They throw dishes at you and you have to like lean with your towel in the direction and like little it's fabulous. I don't even know how else to describe it. It's just darling. There's a Ferris Bueller racing game where you've stolen the car and you're like driving around downtown on your day off. That's the name of the game, is Day Off. There's a section of the game I could describe only as the designers of Sonic the Hedgehog present Super Alice in Wonderland World. And there was mushrooms and it was very weird and the Cheshire Cat was trying to eat me. And it was the first like I had to run from things section and it was absolutely bizarre and fabulous. And the music in that section was fabulous, which also is a good segue into the other thing I wanted to mention, which is, oh my gosh, the music. So all the music is done by Paul Hellman, one of the developers, and it is a collection of chiptune recreations of classical pieces that are not just familiar, but relevant to the story. There's also original pieces and musical arrangements that are lovingly giving tribute to the original material being referenced without breaking copyright. Like, there's a Mos Eisley cantina that's not called exactly that. And yes, when you walk in, there's an entire scene where, like, we don't serve your kind here because he's a robot. It was just darling. And, of course, it's got, like, their not quite the right song version of that and so many more, like, little things like that. And I don't want to, like, ruin any musical surprises too much because I feel like there's so much of these scenes that are connected to music, again, with intention. It's not just like, hey, this is a public domain piece of music I can recreate without getting in trouble. Like, these were all chosen with intention. They all say something, whether it's because the image of that song like evokes something because of another popular media piece, or its function as a requiem or an aria in an opera that it's referencing relates to the piece of story that you're in. And so you're going to find classic stuff from Mozart and Beethoven and Holst and Verdi and Schubert. But the one I thought was really interesting was Camille Saint-Saëns, who, I mean, maybe you guys don't know classical music like I do. That's okay. But they're known for making these really surreal soundscapes, and I would say that they might be like a big classical influence for modern film composers, and I just thought that they were some really good choices for the scenes that they were in, and it was really well put together with that regard. Ah, deep breath, I got one more thing I really want to mention. I know, right?
I just want to say, like, as you were like, I don't know how like familiar with classical music you guys are, I'm not going to lie, the last 3 minutes I've been sitting here like, she is too fucking smart for this podcast.
This game is totally my nerd. I wouldn't have known how much. It's almost an accident that this like became the game that I was helping review here. But this is very much my nerd. And again, I really feel like you can enjoy this without having that level of, you know, philosophy, intellectual, whatnot about it. But like that level of it really also appealed to me, as is obvious about the next section I'm going to go into, which is really talking about this like existential philosophy part. There's a lot of intellectual stimulation, emotional moments in this game. Each chapter's title card offers a quote from a classical poet or a philosopher to muse on. And there's like all these lessons about life, right? How do we comprehend things as a child? Especially Horace, he's born and raised, but not in like the natural order of things. But like, you know, you start to think about that, like, do we skip steps? Or are we just handed a little chip that downloads? And I hit my microphone there. You know, like we have to learn all these things through experiences. We can learn so many things in school. but we get to have our own set of experiences that create what we consider our personality, our life. And Horace does not have those same experiences. And I think that that says a lot about life in general, because we have so many things in our life that we just have to cope with that we aren't given the tools for. And here's this robot being given programmed to deal with these things, but it doesn't hold like the same context as real life experience. He's got adaptive learning AI, but it's still limited by who's programming it. And I think that that's just like an interesting layer to this entire story. And he has to learn all this stuff about what the world really is, like what humor is and how sometimes it's not really funny.
Like our show.
Yep. But what about people we think are our friends that really have their self-interest at heart? And what it is to hurt people or be hurt ourselves. And these are all things that Horace has to go through. There's these bigger themes of destruction and rebirth, where the interconnectedness of things, how one person's existence in a community could be really pivotal. And in the story, we get to learn just how much Horace connected the members of his family before the war. And even the name of a robot, Horace, you know, speaking of all these intellectual things, could be a reference to the Roman poet who was known as the first recorded autobiographer. And that's what Horace is doing. Our robot is narrating a story to us as his autobiography, and that's how we're experiencing the story. The other thing that the Roman poet Horace was noted for is the phrase we all use called carpe diem, which we've generalized to mean seize the day, but I would say more aptly is about seizing the present. And I think that that's a really good way to look at the journey of Horace the robot, because he is learning to live in this like perpetual present because he hasn't had the same collection of normal life experiences to that point. And I just think overall, the game's reflections on life through the lens of a robot is a really lovely commentary on what it is to be alive. So that's my way too many words. I can say that there were some like tiny knocks about the game that I mean, I don't even know that they're worth noting. There was like a couple things, you know, that were my little personal pet peeves about menu text having like too much bloom and were hard to read. I thought it was really weird that there was the opportunity to skip cutscenes. I mean, you do you, but don't skip the story. That's what makes this so great. but yeah, that's in a nutshell.
The game is it's sitting at $14.99. What are your thoughts on that?
All right, so I'm gonna say buy it with a but. So for me, totally a buy it, obviously. The price is right for the amount of content, the joy of discovery. I feel like the console edition, I had to go like look up on PC. There are some things like dev menus where you can like type in things that are part of the game, not like a I'm cheating at it kind of thing, but it's actually like built into the game. But they made sure that that worked in the console version as well. So like you can press the button and it'll bring up a little typing menu. So if you learn like the secret key code or something, you can do the thing. It actually, there is an in-game, like you can give yourself like 2 minutes of invincibility or something if you're like really stuck on something, which I did use totally once. So you shouldn't, it doesn't look like not having played the PC version, it doesn't look like any of that stuff got skipped, which is great. The story is, I mean, fabulous. It has replay value, in my opinion. Like, I'm going to have a totally, like, I'm going to have to play at least a second playthrough to just go down the rabbit hole of references or hidden areas I might miss. Like, because this whole, like, metagame of, ooh, hey, I don't, you know, I have a, and I got a, there's a movie I have to watch now because I was, like, picking at references. I have so many notes on this game, and I'm not even, like, 100% with the game.
Oh, geez.
I know. As for the but, though, like I said earlier, the platforming could be frustrating in parts. And my mindset, you know, talking about like it's a retro game and realizing that, you know, if I look at like a puzzle, that makes it a little bit easier. But if you're prone to motion sickness or you have light sensitivity issues, keep in mind that one of the core platforming mechanics is this whole spinny, flippy, upside down, spin around motion. And there are some sections with flashing colors and screen shake that could be really disorienting for some people. If you're able to get around that, it's at least a try it because the story is so good.
Cool.
Yo, I'm gonna try it. I'm sold.
It is available on Xbox and PS4 and 5, so
yeah, I just wishlisted it.
And I believe it's been on Switch for quite a while. I know Rootbeer was saying it was one of their favorite games of 2021, so it's been Switch for quite some time, finally making the jump to other consoles, and it sounds like it was worth the wait.
Yeah.
Yo, and Rootbeer has some good taste.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for letting me play this and talk about it and ramble at you guys a lot. Hopefully my speed was a little better today. Maybe just a little.
You done good, kid. Proud of you.
That was wonderful of you. I loved that. And for everything that this game is offering, I think you gave it enough time and really honored it. That was beautiful.
I'm just mad because I have to fucking follow that shit later.
Well, I can leave and then you can trash me or something behind my back, which I actually do need to leave anyways.
Because you have your own stream and to do. Tell us about that. Where can people keep up to date with you?
Well, I am Lady Magritte at just about everything, but I also hang out on Twitch most nights and, Friday afternoons showcasing awesome games. So, yeah.
Well, before you leave, I want to say that I'm going to do an immediate callback to how you began your review and said that you unwittingly did not know it, but gave me the perfect segue to talk about an emotional, narrative-driven game that is heavily influenced by Fez. So that was very cool for me. One of my favorite games, by the way.
Well, I look forward to listening to the recording of this later and checking what that all is.
Oh, crap. Now I got to make it good.
Well, you guys have a great night. I'll see you soon.
See you later. Do you have any final words?
This has been awesome. Maybe I'll get to come hang out with you guys again soon.
Yes. We didn't fuck
it
up, you guys.
That's one way to leave, I guess. Cool. Usually people say really rude things, but
I know, right?
I don't know how to take it.
Thursday.
All right, then I'm just going to hang up. Okay, bye.
Next game is No Longer Home, developed by Humble Grove, published by Fellow Traveler, released March 3rd on PS4 and PS5 for $14.99. Bo and Ao are graduating university and preparing to leave the flat they've lived in together for a year. Thanks to visa limitations, Ao is forced to return to Japan, leaving Bo in England. Disillusioned by post-educational life and shoved aside by a government who doesn't want them there, both are trying to come to terms with their uncertain futures, and deep under their South London flat, something grows. Brooke, what is going on in No Longer Home?
Well, what if I told you there was a very emotional indie narrative experience, which includes a sort of love story going on, but it's not quite a dating game. It's sort of a point-and-click adventure game, but also not. It's extremely influenced by Fez, and is almost a visual novel love letter to Fez that the creators put their own semi-autobiographical story into. But it's not even a platformer like Fez is. It's kind of like a memories, reflection, experience, and feelings game. It's at once a surreal kind of trippy experience, and at the same time, all too real, lots of modern, real world elements, settings, details. So it's a lot like Fez in some ways. What's Fez other than some platformer? It's one of my favorite games of all time. Gorgeous. Who out of the group that we have left here today has already played Fez?
I've played Fez on 360, yes.
Yeah, I love that. I played it on 360 as well. Gorgeous. One of my favorite games of all time. Very deep, rich adventure. It's a really magical looking pixelated world, and its famous mechanism that fuels the exploration of the game pretty much made it famous is you can rotate the level itself, other platforms that you're on, like one might rotate a camera in a game. So it's a 2D platformer, kind of like in a 3D world, if that makes sense. You start out, you have to gain the ability to rotate the level of platforms you're on, and certain abilities and collectibles you can use later to do other stuff later. No Longer Home has some similarities. You're starting with nothing. You have to gain different abilities and experiences, but it's not a platformer. If anything, it is a really emotionally heavy, thought-provoking narrative kind of non-linear game that is super influenced mechanically and artistically and sound design-wise, heavily, heavily influenced by Fez. So the vibes are the same. Some of the sound design is it's not trying to hide that it's heavily referencing the game, and it's got even got a similar kind of negative force mystery item theme going on, both narratively and aesthetically to Fez. It's really neat. I actually never expected this. I didn't know any of this going into reviewing this game. I went in blind. I was like, oh, neat. Joe offered me this game. I was like, oh, neat. I can't tell if this is a visual novel or point and click adventure mystery, but I like the title. It's Joe, you son of a bitch. I'm in. with this game is crazy. So it's you do, like, I don't want to spoil too much because a lot of the mechanics will develop as the game progresses, but it is kind of like point and click mystery adventure game, visual novel, but also one of the mechanics you'll discover is you'll rotate rooms that you are exploring to see different views and like find different items, even discover different people to talk to or different doors you didn't see before to kind of like explore out from the house that you began in. When we do experience the dialogue parts of this game, like the narrative choices, we're not playing as just one player. That is pretty much the one thing that I have never even seen before that this game is doing, at least not like this in a way that I can remember. We're playing as both of the two people in the conversation and in the relationship that the game is kind of about. But the game is also about a lot of other things, like a small group of friends who are a community of artists. They're getting a little older, realizing they didn't make it big and they've got to find real jobs now. But yeah, you know, you choose one dialogue option and your next choice is actually the response to whatever you chose before and you just said, because now you're mostly playing as whatever players are on the screen at the time and it's their turn to talk or whatever. You also occasionally aren't just playing as one of the two players who are freely, admittedly exaggerated representations of themselves as the creators and the characters of this game. But no spoilers for what else you might end up playing as in this game. One thing's for sure, this game, a lot like the game that Bree was just talking about, is beating genre boundary ass and like taking names. Like, what is this game? This game is all over the place. But I do find it to be a cohesive project that really made sense. I was super pleasantly surprised by this game. I think it has a lot to offer. It is a little emotionally heavy in the special way that like an indie game can be sometimes. And most of this game is centered around two people in a relationship that some of society can't accept. And the two people within it haven't even hard defined what kind of relationship it is exactly. But it is a long and intimate relationship. And it's a decently long game about getting older, dissecting the world through the eyes of two different people who are very sensitive and thoughtful. So, yeah, you know, I want to say play this game, but wait until you're a little sad and probably smoke some weed, too.
Well, it's $15. What do you think of it?
This is the buy it for me, Joe. I, you know, obviously I found this to be very engrossing. I found it to be really immersive just environmentally too, which I don't always about like the surreal narrative heavy game. I found it to be kind of mystical, but a little bit gritty. And all in all, I think they gave themselves an assignment that would be hard to even write down the concept of on paper. It's hard for me to describe it, but somehow they absolutely nailed whatever it was they were trying to do here. I think this is a really beautiful piece, and I'm honestly really pumped to see what these two get up to next, what they create next.
Nice. And if people are on the cheaper side and you're worried about that price, if you have PlayStation Plus, it is on sale until the 17th for $11.19.
Oh, nice. I just got the email reminding me that I forgot to cancel PlayStation Plus again. So great news.
Good job. All right. Well, Brooke, that is it for you. Thank you so much for coming on, hanging out, and joining us.
This is a really fun show. Thanks for having me. I know I'm not always on a Thursday night, but this is one of this and probably the Roman Sylvania interview, my two favorite Thursdays. Thanks for having me.
Well, we love having you on the Thursday shows.
It was fun.
Jacob, do you have any farewell for her?
Jacob, you got anything nice to say to me, man? Come on.
I mean, you're also too smart for this show. I mean,
LOL. So. Yes, I've got them all full. I'm going to leave on that note, on a high note. I'm not going to try to mess this up. But I was told I'm really smart. Soon.
I'm going to go.
Do you have any final words, Brooke?
Nah, that's it. Nothing for me.
All right. Take
care. Hope you all have a good night. Later.
Bye. See you. Next game, Fitness Boxing, Fist of the North Star, developed and published by Imagineer, released March 2nd on Switch for $49.99. Improve your daily exercise habits, get into shape, and draw back the curtain on a new legendary body. While retaining the basic features of Fitness Boxing, this new installment adds characters and settings from the world of Fist of the North Star for truly effective workouts. Jacob, tell me how much weight you've lost playing Fitness Boxing, Fist of the North Star.
According to it, in my sessions, I've lost anywhere between 50 to 150 calories.
Nice.
In a thing. I am still fat as hell.
Nice.
So I don't know if I can. So, obviously it doesn't work that quickly, but you know, So with this is for the Switch, first off. So unfortunately, you're not going to find it on the Xbox. You're never going to find this on the Xbox, so don't even ask. And what it is that you use the two Joy-Cons, hold them in your hand, and the game tracks like your punches. And if you're not familiar with Fists of the North Star, it is a very old, very old is kind of relative, but it's now celebrating its 40th birthday this year, sir. Yeah, actually this year. Anyway, the manga is turning 40 this year, I believe. And the anime isn't too far behind, but So it's this insane, like Mad Max apocalypse, where instead of everyone having like crazy ass vehicles, everyone just fights with Kung Fu. And like, it's all this like mystical, like ridiculous stuff. And like our main character, Kenshiro, he goes around, like, wanders the wastelands, righting wrongs and all that kind of stuff, while also searching for his lost love. But his, like, big thing is that he does these, like, quick motions, and like, and then, like...
Thank you for doing the voice.
No problem. I had to. And then, like, you know, like, there's always, like, the last punch, and then the other guy's like, huh, I didn't feel anything. And then Kichiro's like, you're already dead. And then the guy's like, what? Head explodes. And it's amazing. All right. It's the best, like, karate anime you're ever going to see. So anyway, so in this game, you're using the two Joy-Cons, and you... Like, it's pretty much just like, all right, well, first we're going to have you warm up. The game walks you through everything. It makes you warm. It actually makes you warm up before you do any exercises. And then it just starts off with simple stuff. Like, are you going to do jabs? Are you going to do full punches? And then it mixes stuff up. And then it also has a cooldown period where, again, you have to stretch and make sure that, you know, you're not dying after each one of these. Me being the super fat guy that I am, naturally I was. But also, I'm not going to lie, I was having fun with it. Like, I usually don't have fun with these kind of games, which I was a little surprised about. But then again, you know, maybe that's all that I ever needed. Maybe all they had to do is just slap Fist of the North Star on it, and I'd be like, ooh, I'll do this. Pretty much, it's just you have all the different trainers. There's various characters from the series that you can unlock, different outfits. Of course, all the guys are in just simple, like, you know, t-shirt and shorts. All the women, you know, who are normally in their Badlands gear now are suddenly in bikinis, of course. And you can use the coins and experience that you get through doing all the different exercises and missions. And there's also an adventure mode too. So there's a plot to this. And of course you get to fulfill your fantasies. My only real issue with the game is that, it really felt like there were times where it wasn't tracking the punches, and it's just like, I know I was doing it with the rhythm, but it just wouldn't put it in as perfect or okay. And like, sometimes it would just straight up register it as a miss. And I'm like, my timing's not off, guys. Like, and there was no way to actually like fix that to make sure that like everything was synced properly. I thought that was kind of weird, but at the same time, I also didn't really care because I was having fun doing it and getting some exercise out of it. So I don't know, but in terms of fitness games for the Switch, like, this is honestly the one that I've had the most fun with.
Well, it's sitting at $50. What are your thoughts on that?
If you're a fan of the anime or just anime in general, I think you might be more likely to spring for $50, but I could see an average consumer being like, what the hell is this? And like being like, where's that like Ring Fit game that came out a couple of years ago? Like, I'm gonna go try that. But honestly, like, I thought it was pretty fun. I'd recommend it for $50. I mean, we don't get all that much Fist of the North Star material stateside anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, get it while you can.
Cool. Next game is Wolong Fallen Dynasty, developed by Team Ninja, published by Koei Tecmo, released May 3rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $59.99. Wolong Fallen Dynasty is a dramatic, action-packed story of a nameless militia soldier fighting for survival in a dark fantasy version of the later Han Dynasty, where demons plague the Three Kingdoms. Players fight off deadly creatures and enemy soldiers using swordplay based on Chinese martial arts, attempting to overcome the odds by awakening the true power from within. Aki, I'm guessing the overcoming the odds means beating the first boss.
Yeah. In this, you play as your own custom protagonist. They are in a village that gets ransacked during the start of the Yellow Turban Rebellion, which is pretty famous during the Three Kingdoms era. And you start the game off by dying like a bitch. And then you're brought back by some magic pendant that some guy has, who's like, you're such a good person. I couldn't just let you die because you saved him, and then got killed immediately. and then you proceed to die a lot more. The game, you get different armor pieces and different types of weapons, and you end up fighting a bunch of mooks that are, you know, terrorizing the local area. And it fights somewhat like Dark Souls. Not quite. It's you can fight people just by running forward and just attacking them. You will probably die until you get stronger if you try that. The whole thing is to be more like Sekiro, to sneak up behind them and backstab them and kill them instantly. And it's amazing. And it's really fun to do. And then you get to a boss where you can't do that. And instead, you have to fight with them. And a lot of the game is block at just the right time to do a parry that takes out some of their spirit meter, is what they use instead of endurance and poise and all that other stuff that you see in other games. It's spirit meter instead. And once you damage that enough, you get to do a fatal strike, which will not kill bosses in one hit, but will do a lot of fucking damage, hopefully. Because it doesn't always do a ton of damage either. It really depends on how much fatal damage you are able to do with your equipment, and, you know, just kill the boss. And for most players who don't play these games, you're not going to beat the first boss, which is the tutorial boss. You're just not going to. The game is incredibly difficult. Joe, I don't think you ever beat the first boss.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, no.
Only 33% of players have.
I'm level 10.
I'm honestly shocked it's even 33%.
True Achievements has an article about it. Also, Joe, get good, Scrub.
I'm level 10. I've grinded. I got the special edition, like the fucking season pass armor, and I can't fucking beat.
Yeah, enemies in this, lots of the normal enemies, they do play protective. Sometimes they'll go out and attack, but they'll also defend, especially if they're higher level. They learn to defend. Bosses don't. They will defend, but they're going to wail on you a lot and very quickly, and you're fucked. That's the entirety of what's going to happen, because they're hyper aggressive. They're so extremely aggressive that there are many times if you get hit, you just get stun locked into death, and it doesn't take too long, because I put, you get 5 stats that you get to level up and put points into, and they're all based on the elements. So fire, water, earth, electricity, and metal, I think, is the last one. And I put everything into earth because that gives you more defense naturally, and it also allows you to equip more armor and still be counted as light armor, so you can still dodge around really quickly and keep your iframes, which are important if I understood how to work those correctly, it would be very important for me. I just use it to jump far, far away very, very quickly. Because I don't play these games the right way because I'm blind, and the games like this are very hard. And so I put like a bunch of my I'm still putting a bunch of points into that. And I think it took me until level 7 to beat the boss. And it was luck, honestly, straight up luck.
Jeez.
And then I hit the second boss, which is the first of two bosses in the very next level. And I sat there for a while trying to beat it, too. but if you can beat both of those bosses, you're going to be good for a while. Because after you beat the second boss, you get a divine beast, which is what happens when you promise brotherhood or oath or something with characters, and there's a whole bunch of them. So you're going to get these, you're going to get, like, I think right now I have like 4 or 5 of them, something like that, and there's more of them to obtain. And basically they're just legendary creatures, and they will give you a special little meter that you can fill up during combat. You're not going to fill it up in a fight with a mook. It's going to take a lot of mooks to fill it up, because it's based on how much damage you do and all that other fun stuff. And basically, it allows you to use a special move outside of the magic that you can use if you level up your mage skills anyways. And basically, it summons this beast, and it does an elemental attack. Or, and this is going to be the important bit, it will boost all of your abilities, make you take less damage, let you refill your spirit meter much faster, because the enemies will break yours, and then you get stunned just as readily. Also, with your spirit meter is a whole bunch of things. It's your endurance, so your martial arts take it up, dodging takes it up, deflecting takes it up, but also your magic takes it up. So the only way to get it back is if it's below neutral, you can wait and it'll go back to neutral. And there's 4 negative and 4 positive, with neutral being none at all. And the way you gain it otherwise is you hit things and you deflect perfectly. And that's it. Otherwise, you have negative and you're going to get stunned a lot. So this entire game is all about deflecting things so you can get that stuff up, attacking a little bit, deflecting some more, and then hopefully the enemy will stop long enough that you can actually cast a spell or use a martial art, which I've never found to be the case. Because again, they're extremely aggressive and will not get off your ass for anything. They like riding it very hard with no lube. But once you get that thing that lets you take less damage and quickly raise your spirit meter, the game gets a lot easier for a while. Eventually, you're going to smack your head, and it's probably against Lubu. And then I'll tell you how to beat that if I ever manage to. It took me over a week to beat the first boss.
Ember says, whoa, long, more like, how long will it take me to beat the first boss?
Yeah, it took me a week-ish. And then the second boss, which I got to within 30 minutes of beating the first boss, I got to the second one. It took me a couple days to beat it. And after that, I got into, like, chapter 3 of the game within, like, a day or two. Because every boss after that, I either beat first time or within, like, the first 2 or 3 times until I hit Lubu, and I've been stuck there because Lubu, if anyone knows their history or Romance of the Three Kingdoms stuff, Lubu is a beast, and they very clearly made him just far too fucking OP in this game. And yeah, so I'm stuck there, and I think there's something like 8 chapters in the game, and I'm in 3. Nice. And it took me it took me like 3 weeks, I think, because I think I got this 2 weeks before.
Yeah, you got this a while ago. So we've had this for a while. We actually pushed back the review a week to give you more time with it.
And I'm
these fucking bosses are bullshit.
Yeah, they're brutal. I don't like the boss personally because they are exceptionally hard, and they're good good view of how good you are at the game, because the whole game is about deflecting stuff. So they're a good test of skill if that's how you play the game. But a lot of people are going to do the other part of the game, which is stealth killing everything, you know, like I do, which then you suddenly reach a boss, and that is not what you're fucking prepared to do at all. And unlike, you know, like some of the games, it, like, this isn't done to a beat or anything. The enemies just attack however they want to attack, and the more you piss them off, the harder they're going to hit you, and the faster. And, you know, these enemies, they have unblockable attacks that you have to deflect or dodge. And if you fail to deflect them properly, fucking train. If you fail to deflect them properly, you're going to take a lot of spirit damage, and you might just be one shot. Cool. Because this shit ain't a joke. They will one shot you with these special attacks if you don't raise your health or seriously raise your defense. So the bosses are unnecessarily hard to me. I enjoy outside of boss. I enjoy the rest of the combat. It's really fun. Because you can actually fight the normal enemies as well, because eventually you're going to fail at assassinating everybody.
I'm loving the actual gameplay, like running through the stages, fun, beating the shit out of everyone. You know,
and then you hit a boss, and then it sucks.
Then I hit the first boss, and it's a brick wall. I think they have to rebalance this game big time, because it is like, that is just too much of a hurdle for most gamers to get over at the very beginning of a game. And
what really hurts my feelings is I think they did rebalance it when it came out, because when I first played it, that boss wasn't anywhere near as aggressive. And then I know it had an update when the game actually properly came out. And then I tried it again, because then you told me of the special armor that I didn't know existed. And the boss was so much more aggressive. I had trouble even getting him past the first form at that point, because he'd kill me before I could even take down half of his
health.
That's
my favorite thing, is when you tell people, oh, well, did you get to a second form? There's a second form?
Yeah, the first boss is really hard to beat, just his first form, and then he goes crazy and has a second form. Within, it's an entire new health bar, by the way. Attacks much heavier. You don't get a save in between that, or a refill on your healing potions or anything. You just have to eat a lot of dick and hope you survive.
Well, the game's $59.99. What are your thoughts on it?
I think for fans of the Soulsborne series, especially if you really like Sekiro, because lots of people are like, this is almost exactly Sekiro, you will like this. Everyone else, this isn't where you want to start. This, you're not going to enjoy the fights. They're incredibly hard, and they're outright fucking unfair sometimes. And you're not going to enjoy it. So the people who like these types of games, this is totally a buy it. If you're not someone who likes these games, this isn't going to make you want to play them. This is just going to make you hate them even more. So,
nice.
Yeah. Personally, I enjoy the time period, so I enjoy the story behind this. The bosses are ruining this game for me personally.
All right, next game to talk about is Flash Out 3, developed and published by Jujubee, released March 10th on Xbox One, Series X, and S for $19.99, where high speed meets high stakes, where unforgiving combat, loud electronic music, and addictive boosts of adrenaline mix up to separate winners from losers, where gravitation is nothing more than an empty word. This is where the world of Flash Out 3 will take you and your ride to the absolute limits. Jacob, tell us about your time with Flash Out 3.
So Flash Out 3 is a futuristic racer. And it's pretty much as it said, like, you know, the idea of gravity is whatever, because on most areas, or on a lot of areas on the tracks, you're able to pretty much just go in like a full 360 degree circle, and decide like where exactly you want to position yourself. So the game starts up, and you get to choose like who you want to be your driver, man or woman. And then you're given like your car, which you can then modify the weapons that you have on it. And I'm not going to lie, like the first couple of races, it was actually pretty, like it was actually a good idea, like after each race, to not only upgrade some of the weapons, but also just fool around with them and just see like what worked best. And honestly, I found like this doesn't make a difference for my gameplay because it's just whatever, either the game's going to let you win or not. But this one, I actually thought it was pretty interesting that the weapons placement did actually help me out a lot. Like I was just like, all right, well, this gun's absolutely friggin' useless. I'm going to toss on, you know, a couple of missile launchers and, that should be okay. But then the game's just like, you don't have enough energy to do it. So you have to manage what is really going to work on the weapons for your car, how you can get the, like, you know, obviously get more speed if you can. But then also just, you know, also manage the energy levels for your car. So you pretty much just have a string of different, tracks that you can go around. They look okay. Like none of them like particularly like set my imagination on fire, but it's not like it's necessarily like, I mean, it's not a bad game at all. Let me just like get that out there first. I don't view this as like a bad game. It's not a bad racing game. It feels dated though. Like it felt like it honestly felt slower than most modern racers. And it honestly felt like I was taking a trip back to like playing like games on my original Xbox or Xbox 360 of those type of games, except now it's on my Xbox Series X. Like it had a very retro feel to it. One that I don't know that I was exactly comfortable with, like, cause usually when it's just like, oh, well, we're going to make a retro game, like it's 90s or farther back. And it's a little disconcerting that it's just like, well, it's a retro racer. Guess what? It's from when you were in college. Oh God, I'm old. so like, it's not bad. Like controls were okay. Like it, like everything felt responsive. The weapons
were a rough time with the controls in this game. I wasn't feeling the controls. I was hitting walls like crazy. I couldn't get my ship under control the way I wanted it to. It didn't feel right to me.
There were some times, especially when I was like coming off of like the ceiling and then had to like go into a sharp turn because, you know, suddenly the track is no longer like 360 degrees. Those parts I do recall slamming into the walls a bit. But it's one of those things where the game like kind of picks you back up and then you just go right back at it. And hopefully you're not on a elimination course, because otherwise you will get screwed on that. But yeah, it was fine. Like I don't know. Like it was okay. You said
like three times in a row there.
Well, it's just I don't want to like the thing is I really just don't want to disparage this game because it's not bad. It's, I don't know, it just didn't really do anything. Yeah, it just didn't do anything for me. And I'm like, I'd never even heard of this series before. And so it's just, I don't know whether I want to like go back and like see if I could find the other titles in the series. But it's just, it was okay. Like, it's like if you're looking for a very specific kind of retro racer, then yeah, this is all for it. Like, I'm all for it. But.
Well, it's $20. What's your verdict for the general consumer at $20?
I'd wait for a sale. Like, yeah, it's pretty much just wait for a sale on this one.
All right, moving on. Next game is Synth Riders, developed and published by Klug Interactive, released February 22nd on PlayStation VR 2 for PS5 for $24.99. A bundle with a Gorilla 7 pack is available for $32.99. An all-inclusive bundle is available for $89.99. There are various DLC packs and individual songs are available for $1.99. Let the music move you as you catch notes, ride the rails, and dodge obstacles in the unique physical experience optimized for PlayStation VR 2 system. With remastered visuals, nuanced controller haptics as you ride the rails, headset rumble for in-game obstacle feedback, next-gen performance, and SSD optimization to dramatically reduce load times, players will have a deeply immersive and seamless gameplay experience. This takes the honor of our first PSVR 2 review. Isn't that nifty? Just talking to myself.
Yeah, that is nifty. Yo, that's because I turn off my headset. Like, how I turn it off out of respect for Aki when she's doing a review. I turned it off for this one, too. Man. Getting all uppity with me.
Listen, bitch, I'll cut you. Synth Riders is basically a rhythm action game. Well, not action. It's a rhythm exercise game for PSVR 2. You have one wand in each hand. Well, I don't know what the hell to call these controllers. They're so distinctly, they're like circles. I don't know what to call them. You hold one controller in each hand. You hold one testicle in each hand. You hold one controller in each hand. One is a blue orb. One is a red orb. The red orb.
So you're saying you have a blue ball.
The orbs will come flying at you on the screen, and you have to use the controllers to basically punch the orbs as they come at you, whether they're red or blue, with the corresponding controller. They'll switch sides. They'll go up, down, all around. Sometimes there will be trails where you have to go in loops with your arms or around curves. They have rails that you have to ride where you'll have an orb at the start and then a solid line that leads to other balls along the rail that you have to connect along the way. Thimber saying Beat Saber, but beat balls. Close, but I actually prefer this over Beat Saber. I've played them both, and I'm having a lot more fun with this one, believe it or not. They also have green balls, which those you have to do one-handed, but it has to remain the same hand for the whole stretch of those green orbs. And it took me a while to learn that one. And then they have gold orbs, which are both hands together. You pick a song. It has the menu. The interface is very similar to Beat Saber. At least last I remember Beat Saber, they have the packs at the bottom of the screen and then a list of the songs in each pack. I think it's a bit convoluted. I would rather have just a list of songs instead of the packs at the bottom, because once you get so many packs, you have to scroll across to find more packs, and it just gets irritating to find the song that you want. You're like, what pack was it in? Why can't I just have them? I don't know. Having the packs as default seems like a weird method to have it, but it encourages DLC purchases, which games like this are heavily reliant on DLC purchases, and they have a pretty solid lineup of DLC available. They supplied me with the Gorillaz pack, which is pretty cool. They have Dare, they have Clint Eastwood, Feel Good Inc. There's some good stuff in there, and some of the songs are kind of tough. I've been playing on normal, and I'm not the most fit guy in the world, so this has been putting me, like, I had to buy face masks to sop up sweat from me playing this VR thing, because I get sweaty. Let's see. The performance is great. Visually, everything looks good. Everything looks clear. Frame rate is good, smooth. They have obstacles in the way that you have to dodge as they come at you. And they have rumble in the headset built in so that, like, if you smack into one, you actually feel it, which is neat, having haptics in the headset. Load times are good. No problem there. Again, my only real issue with the game is how the menu systems are laid out. I wish it were easier to find songs that you wanted. And then I guess the only other issue is variety. Most of them are electronic stuff, which makes sense. Rock isn't really suitable for these kind of games, but they have some Muse in there. They have some Offspring in there. I think they have a Rancid song in there. So they have some heavier rock stuff in there. I would love to see more, and I would love to be able to buy more, because I'm having fun with this game. And at $25, if you have a PSVR 2, I think this is a game that is going to sit on the shelf next to Beat Saber as, like, those games you must check out with a VR, because it just keeps you active, keeps you moving, and it's a fun time. Any questions?
Can I go to the bathroom?
No.
Oh.
Aki, any questions?
No, it's an exercising game. That's all I need to know.
No, it's a rhythm game that's in VR.
And it which makes means you move. It's an exercising game.
Kind of, yeah. But it's fun. So, next game is Sim Airport, developed by LV Game Dev, published by Ultimate Games, released February 24th on Xbox One, Series X, and S for $19.99. Build and manage your airport, an international hub or a regional masterpiece. It's up to you. Buy more land to scale out or escalators to scale up with multiple floors. You're in full control in this modern business management tycoon. Jacob, what is going on in Sim Airport?
Okay.
Jacob, so first, did you make sense of Sim Airport?
I tried to. Like, I tried. First off, this game is available on Steam. It's probably a much better game on Steam than this is definitely something that is made for you to be playing on your computer monitor, like 1 foot away from your face. With your mouse and keyboard, being able to go through everything instead of trying to do everything on an Xbox controller. And it's not like the devs didn't try with this. The game, it's not bad. It's a very simplistic airport sim that reminded me a lot of SimCity 1.4, released back in the very early 90s, before we got into SimCity 2000 and all that kind of shit. It's just a very the interface itself is just very it's very simple and retro, but it has some neat parts to it. I had a lot of fun just trying to build up the buildings and where am I going to put the baggage handle? Where am I going to put the stuff for the airlines? All that kind of stuff. And it just felt, it was also very frustrating because it felt like some of the stuff that should just make sense wasn't making sense. Stuff from certain buildings should have been talking to other buildings, and maybe I was doing something wrong. I will fully accept that possibility. I had a plane breakdown, and okay, so you'd use it for a hangar. You just toss it in a hangar and have somebody work on it, right? Well, no, that's not what hangars are for, apparently. I was honestly at a bit of a loss for where am I going to stash this thing? And then it just felt my flight got I had this one flight that also got delayed, and it was just instead of just moving it to the next, moving it over to a different terminal, the game just straight up canceled the flight. And I'm like, aren't these people in the air? Aren't they in the air? You can't just cancel that. It's just all right. Well, nah, the gate's not open. Billy Bob, get out there with your bazooka, shoot it down. It was odd. And so it's a weird game. I'm not exactly sure why it got released on Xbox, other than it seems like Ultimate Games releases every sim that they publish on Xbox as well. kudos to them for bringing the sim genre to consoles. This is a very questionable release. This is a try it at best. It feels undercooked, and it just doesn't feel right on the Xbox.
It's disappointing that from what I see in the store, it does not offer mouse and keyboard support. It feels like that should be there.
It should have been, honestly. I think there is fun to be had with this game if you're into this kind of stuff, but doing it from a controller, it just felt I had a hard time navigating the menus in themselves, even though everything's set up to be very simple, and the game does have a pretty thorough tutorial, I'll give it that, but it just feels like it's a lot of, it feels like somebody gave you a Lego set for it to make an airport, dumped all the Legos in front of you, and then snatched away the manual, and then was just that building over there, it needs 4 windows. What size windows? I don't know, man. You fucking figure it out. like it was frustrating. Like it's got potential and maybe future. Like if they decide to make a sim airport too, or airport sim. I'm sorry, I forget what exactly it's called. Sim airport. Like if they make one in the future, like I'd be willing to give it a try. But honestly, most of the fun that you're going to have is just decorating your buildings, which, yeah, I don't know.
All right. Well, speaking of putting things together, the next game is Puzzling Places, developed and published by Realities.io, released February 22nd on PSVR 2 for PS5 for $19.99. Put together hyper-realistic miniatures of beautiful places from around the globe. Enter the meditative flow of puzzling and enjoy each place coming alive with their unique and immersive soundscapes as you complete them. Puzzling Places is a modern take on an age-old pastime that's fun for the whole family thanks to its simple gameplay and easy controls. First off, I would love to play this with my family, but that would require multiple headsets, I believe, so I don't think that's happening. But this is basically you're putting together 3D puzzles in a 3D space via VR, and it is really friggin' cool. I've never done puzzles in 3D before. I wasn't too sure what to expect. When you start the game, you have a whole bunch of puzzles to select from. I believe there's like 25 in the base game, something like that. And you can choose whether the puzzle has 25 pieces, 50 pieces, 100, 200, or 400 pieces, which that seems like a lot for a puzzle. That's a lot for a puzzle that you're like staring at and you have to walk around and figure out. Like you pick a puzzle from the wall, basically. You hit the trigger on the controller and you're holding that piece. You find a matching piece, you grab that one, put them together, and they snap together. And then they're together. Thankfully, it's really it's forgiving in that you don't have to be 100% precise. And there's, you know, sometimes you could kind of fudge around. If you have some pieces surrounding it, you can find something similar and put it nearby, and it'll just snap into place, and you could luck out that way. A lot of it is just going to be a lot of picking up a piece, taking a look at it, comparing it. They have some visual references at the bottom of the screen that you could look down at. You could even pick those up, and because it's VR 3D space, just set them next to you if you want, floating in space, organize them how you want them. Yeah, and you're putting together puzzles. It's fairly basic in what it is. But there's tons of longevity, not only the fact that there's a lot of puzzles available in the game, there's a lot of DLC available. They have, I believe, 11 or 12 monthly packs already, since it's been on PS4 for quite some time. I'm not sure what improvements the game offers as opposed to the original PSVR version, as I never played that one. I would imagine that it has better visuals, better tracking. Based on the fact that this has actual 360 degree tracking instead of the original PSVR just having a shitty webcam and magic wands, the tracking is a lot more reliable in this game, and it's a lot easier to put stuff together than I would imagine it being with the magic wands. But at $20, I think this is another really solid pickup if you have PSVR 2. This is one that I wasn't too sure if I would enjoy, but they have a free trial on the store. And after a few minutes with the trial, I'm like, I'm going to email these guys and see if we could check it out on the show. And they were nice enough to send over a code, and I am more than happy to give it my seal of approval and say that at $20, this is a buy it.
Cool.
See, that's why you shouldn't be muted. That way you could converse with me.
Maybe I don't want to converse with you. Yeah, well, should we consider
shit.
That one?
Tough shit. Next game to talk about is Zombie Derby Pixel Survival, developed and published by Brine Media. Released March 9th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $4.99 each. Smash your way through hordes of zombies and countless obstacles in a rip-roaring racing arcade. Experience the zombie apocalypse like you've never seen it before. Eradicating zombies has never been so colorful, exciting, and engaging before. Don't let any zombies snack on your brain. Jacob, what is going on in Zombie Derby Pixel Survival?
So this game said it was the most exciting zombie adventure you're ever going to have.
Something like that.
Yeah. All right. That's a lie.
In a rip roaring racing arcade, like you've never seen it before.
I've seen it before. Whole lot of lies. Anyway,
that's in voxels. You don't see many zombie games with voxel.
I mean, unless you've been a reviewer on this show for a few years, but
shut up.
Anyway, so this is a simple get from point A to point B racing game. And you start off with like a standard vehicle, which you could then upgrade to other vehicles like a cop car or like, you know, trucks and stuff like that. And then you can also upgrade the vehicles, you know, make it go faster, make it have more nitro, make the weapons better, you know, beef up your defenses, all that kind of stuff. And then you just go through the level and you have to manage like your fuel. You have to manage your weapons because you can run out and, you know, well, I mean, to be fair, it is a zombie apocalypse. So it's not like you're going to have infinite weapons. So, I mean, fair on the game devs for that. But it just, I found it to be really frustrating because a lot of like, I don't know, a lot of it felt like the same stuff over and over again. And even if I did beat the level, like the next one is just, it just really, it just was more of the same. And I don't know, like it got, like it wasn't bad. Like it's fine.
I like this one. I had fun. I thought it's repetitive, but it was enjoyable.
Very repetitive. Well, it's very repetitive, but the thing is the charm wore off for me real quick. And it's just like, I don't know. Like there were so many times where it's like, okay, cool. The race, like this level's over after this hill. And it's like, nope, now you have to go over this. And if you didn't save up enough fuel, then fuck you. Cause you're not going to make it. And it's just like, dude, like, what do you want from me? Like, I get that, you know,
just you grind, you get more money, you upgrade your shit, and go over and over.
No, I trust me. I'm aware that you have to grind for this game. But it's just like this wasn't fun enough for me to grind like consistently that this game requires you to do. And it's just, I don't know. If this thing costs like more than $5, I'd be like, absolutely not. Like, but it's a fuck it. Why not for me? It's an absolute, like,
I don't know. I think it's a buy it. I think it's fun. I think it's $5. It's cheap. It's enjoyable. I think it's better than a try it, so I'm giving it a buy it. And I'll probably buy it on Xbox because I only played it on Windows. So I want to get those other achievements.
Of course you do.
Yes, it's an easy achievement game, of course, but I thought it was fun. So one final game to talk about tonight is Sniper Elite 5 Rough Landing Mission and Weapon Pack DLC, developed and published by Rebellion, released March 7th for Sniper Elite 5 for $14.99, available in part of Season Pass 2, which is available for $29.99. Season Pass 2 kicks off with the release of an amazing new mission called Rough Landing. Allied airmen, including a high-ranking officer with critical intelligence, have been shot down over a dense woodland and are now being hunted by Nazi troops. Carl's mission is to find the hidden pilots and retrieve the intelligence. Aki, how long did it take you to find the intelligence?
About 40 minutes. Like all the DLC these games, these are singular missions. They're not super long. The longest you're going to spend in any level is maybe 2 hours. And that's probably on authentic difficulty, which there is an achievement for beating the DLC on that. So have fun. Cause it actually acts like real sniping. In other words, there's wind and bullet drop and it's a bitch cause you have shitty zoom because this is all old guns. This gives you a couple new weapons that are, again, kind of meh. Lots of the DLC weapons are very middle to low end, surprisingly. But in this, you play as Carl or whatever character you've chosen to play as. I always play as Marie. the I don't remember if she's French or Italian anymore, resistance fighter lady. You have to go find some pilots who have gone down. They were shot down over this little area, and you have to go find them before the Nazis do. And by that, I mean, they're hiding and the Nazis will never find them, but you still have to go get them. and by get them, I mean, you have to talk with them because you don't even lead them anywhere. So, so yeah, there's four of them, I believe. And then with that, you also have to turn around and find some special microfilm that doesn't seem particularly micro when you actually get it, because it's a huge fucking suitcase of stuff that they were taking pictures of that are going to help take down the Nazis further than you've already done. Because apparently the stuff that you stopped in the main game, there is still a small contingency of people trying to further that plan, that even though you destroyed all of it, apparently you didn't destroy all of it now. So now people are trying to bring that out, and that's seemingly what the pictures were supposed to be of. And yeah, it's not a huge level this time. It's a fairly small contained one, which is nice. I prefer them that way, because when they get too big, they become very tedious.
You like them small.
Yep.
Good news, Jacob.
I knew that was going to go there. We were making fun of you because you're small. Yeah, so you...
Ain't nothing about me so small.
Your IQ, your height.
Oh, shit. All right. Actually, hold on. First one, yes. Second one, no. I'm 6 foot. Third one, my wife likes it, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, women like plenty of small things. You're just apparently one of them to your wife. Anyways.
Good news, Jacob. What?
What's up? The attention that was paid. Outstanding. So yeah, you go around, you find the stuff, you obviously kill the shit out of Nazis because it's fun. And yeah, there's not really a lot else to say about it. It is a nice new little area. They say it's wooded. It's not super wooded, actually, surprisingly. It's in the woods, but this is basically a gigantic clearing. You don't go through a whole bunch of wooded area. It's mostly farmland like you find in every other mission. And yeah, it's a nice little fun, quick little map to play in. Well, like all of them are.
It's $15, or they have the season pass 2 available for $29.99. The season pass is going to have let me pull this back up here.
It should have at least 3 pieces of DLC missions, and 3 to 6 weapon packs would be my guess, just based on what they usually do.
They have this linking to season pack 1, which is not the right one.
Yeah, less than useful.
Yeah, it's going to have 2 missions, some character packs, some weapon skins, just fun shit like that. Do you think it's worth 15 for the mission or 30 for the full season pass, or what do you think people should do?
Honestly, I would wait until there was a sale on it. Yes, these are fun, and I think they're worth playing, but they're a single mission. I'm sure neither of them are going to take super long, because none of them so far have taken super long. So it's really hard to be like, oh yes, this is $15, go get it. I would say it's $15 for both of them, I think, is a more reasonable price. Because to me, with each one of these individually being $15 is kind of like, oh, every single map pack in every single Call of Duty costs $15, and there's only like 10 of them in each Call of Duty game. It's just that's about the same level to me. I don't think they deserve to be that costly. You know, if they had stopped with the one, because I think the first one had 3 missions as well as the original pre-order mission, and only cost $30 as well. So I'm kind of surprised there's not 3 missions in here. The guns are probably all going to be mediocre, just like the other one was. So you're not getting a bunch here. And I, unlike the first season pack, season pass, I mean, where there were the missions, but there were also weapon packs, I have a feeling this one is going to be, this mission also includes new weapons, and it's not going to have an individualized weapon pack itself. It's going to be part of the mission. Because like this one, it gave me two weapons, but it wasn't an individual DLC on its own. It was just part of the mission. So I would wait for like a 50% off deal personally. I think they're worth playing. They do further the story, but $30 for two missions is that's asking an awful lot for not a lot.
Yeah, I pulled up the page. It's going to have two campaign missions, six weapon packs, two weapon skin packs, and four character skins. So I guess wait for a sale on that. But if you pick it up, it's a good time.
Yeah, yeah, very much cool.
So. All right, that is it for this episode. Ooh, it's been a long one.
Yeah, yeah, just a wee bit. Yeah,
that's what happens when you have a half-hour review with one game.
It was worth it. And honestly, I alone could have gone longer.
I know you could have.
No. Well, yeah, she could have gone longer in that regard. Yeah, that's true.
Oh, music. Gonna play something romantic-y with Romancevania. I don't know what yet. We'll figure it out. But
Bitches ain't shit?
No. Thanks to the two of you for being here. Thanks to Brooke and Bree for coming on and hanging out as well. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
We need to have Brooke and Brie on more often.
We do. They're fun.
It's true, but I have a feeling Aki's saying that for other reasons.
No comment.
Also, I would just like to say, like, I was originally going to retort to Aki after she was trying to make fun of various size of parts of my body. That I was about to say, like, oh, well, at least I'm not going to die alone, surrounded by plastic models. And then I thought about it, like all the Star Wars action figures that are literally here on my fucking desk. And I'm just like, yeah, no, that fate's going to befall on me too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, yeah.
Good night, everybody.
Baby, back. I love the way she holds me. Shattered all my fear to end my life. To take back what I've done. I want to fix it all. I want to start again. Come back to me. Come back to me. We can start again. We can just be.
Baby. my baby.